Hey, how's it hanging, everybody? Welcome back to Tag Team Pokemon Trading Card Games from your podcasting duo. My name is Riley Hulvert, joined as always by my good friend, Mr. JW Kruall. Mr. Andrew Mahone is absent today. GW, how's it going today?
Hey, pretty good, Riley. I just heard before the cast that since you've been away, you haven't heard my news, and that's I got let go from my job, which is sad. But hey, maybe there's a listener in the audience who happens to be
With a job opportunity.
a CEO or has a job opportunity, a hiring manager out there that wants to hire somebody with a
True.
bright mind and is hungry.
Yeah, a hungry, enthusiastic young professional
Oh
looking to
man.
make an impact in an industry. Yeah.
And
If
change
that
the
sounds like
world.
someone that you want, Javi's your guy.
Oh man, I hate the game. I really hate the game of job hunting. Like some of these companies that I'm applying for, I actually do really believe in the mission
Yeah.
that they're putting. Like there's like legitimate, like, okay, this would be very cool. I really resonate with what you're trying to do. And then there are these other companies where it's like, I could care less. Like,
What is
I'm
the
gonna
job?
clock
Yeah.
in. Yeah, I'm gonna clock in, clock out, and then try to, find something a little better,
Yeah, no,
as
I
soon as I
feel you,
can,
man.
right?
And
So.
I know that you know, it's just like so exhausting too. You just have to fry so much and send your resume so many places with the hopes that it kind of falls through for you.
And that's, I get it. I get it. It's just, yeah, it's kind of a funny game. And, talking to recruiters is really funny. And I don't know, just everything. And this is my first, I don't know. I was unemployed for a long time, if you count me being a musician, but this is my first, bout with on, just really hardcore job hunting. And it just is, it can suck your soul out. So.
It can, man. I was really depressed by the end of like my hunt for a job.
Are you talking like right out of college?
Yeah, like those couple months, because I took 6 months basically between graduating and starting at Epic. Actually, maybe closer to 7 because graduated in May. And for a couple of those months, like I had already accepted the position at Epic, and I was just intentionally taking some free time, but. The first like half of that, I did not have a solid job locked down, and oh my gosh, like in those like final weeks before I finally got a job, I was like losing my mind, I feel like. Not to scare
No. I mean,
you.
we have our 6 to 9 months of savings and
Yeah.
that kind of support, and everything's fine in from like a financial department.
Which helps, yeah.
The Crewall financial department, we're not like trying to, obviously we're cutting back on things, and we're scrimping
Sure.
and saving just to be responsible. But we're in a good spot. So ask me again in 6 months, and we'll see where we're at, if my hair is grayed or not. But yeah, it's certainly an interesting time over here. How about for you, Riley? What's going on?
It's honestly been really good. This week has been very exceptionally good for me, honestly. Not for like any like crazy particular reason. I've just been riding good vibes and things have been working out all week for me. I've been crushing my job, to be honest.
Well, good for you.
And they just the guy who like manages the offices reached out to me today and said he has a bigger one for me, which is awesome because I've been in this
Whoa.
kind of small office for the past 5 years, and
You get a corner office, you think?
it's not a corner, but it's like twice as large as my current one, basically, which is sick. Because I was just complaining earlier this week because I like to have meetings in my office sometimes, definitely one-on-ones, but larger meetings as well. And it was annoying because you can't really fit that many people in there. So I'm excited to have some more space. And yeah, things are I had a really good workout yesterday, like just good vibes all around. And I feel like I'm kind of it's like a snowball effect where like I'm kind of in things are going well, which is like putting me in a good mood and like I'm doing better like in general just like in my day to day because I'm feeling
Yeah.
good and then that makes things continue to go well which makes me
Yeah,
get
man.
up. You know
Yeah, that's awesome.
it
That's a good feedback loop to have.
is yeah so I'm hoping that continues for as long as possible.
I'm hoping that for you as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
But we got a lot to talk about. We got a lot of poke to discuss. I have the Knoxville Regional Championship coming up this weekend, and so we're going to take a look at what happened in Liverpool, and then where that leaves us and the gang heading into Knoxville. But first, there's a little bit of news. We got Prize Pack Series 4 coming out. It's supposed to be released in February, in mid-February.
Like a Valentine's Day treat.
Like a little Valentine's Day treat. Yeah, if you don't have, you know, your side piece, your significant other, at least you have Poke.
Right? That's right.
At least you have Play Pokemon League Prize Pack. So they're supposed to come out mid-February, but apparently leagues have been getting them early and awarding them already. So we pretty much know what to expect from this next series of packs. And I mean, we've kind of said it before on the cast, but like, I'm a huge fan of the prize packs. They look so sick. This was one of the best ideas because they are just that like enhancement of a card that players would already play. But they're kind of swagged out, right? It's like, it really works for everyone. It gets people to attend leagues, and then also, you know, gives them cards they can use in their decks and feel cool about playing in their decks. Like, it just a slam dunk, this program.
Yeah, I totally agree. Whoever came up with this definitely deserves a raise because it's such a great incentive, right? It encourages you to participate in your local league. And it's like, they're really fun and satisfying to open as well. Like, that's probably like one of the highlights for me of going to local tournaments is getting to interact with these packs. And I feel like every series they've kind of upped the ante and made them more and more like relevant in terms of like the card pool that they're including. And I think they've kind of nailed down the system here. Also just got to say like the foil patterns on these cards are so gorgeous as well. Like, so beautiful. Got a couple highlight cards want to call out, of course, as we're looking at some of those folks who have cracked early. Don't do that. Lovely listeners, don't crack these early. But if you do and the picture ends up online,
sell them. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably don't take them to eBay 2 weeks before street date. Yeah. But hey, if you do, we can look at the pictures. So that's kind of fun. I think of any like meta card that's in there, you can't skip over Iono. Iono getting the cosmic foil, galaxy foil, with the stamp, which is really, really sick. Another expensive Iono art for people who like running expensive Iono arts. Pretty much every relevant special energy is getting printed, jet energy perhaps being a highlight there. You know, Giratina players rejoice. Reversal energy also, Perlia getting the play print. We're getting Bravery Charm, Lost Vacuum, Pal Pad, Trekking Shoes, Rare Candy. I mean, just like, honestly, like all of the kind of bones of the deck, if you will, of many decks are getting printed. Yeah. Even amongst the Vs and the EXs, like Maridon's getting one. Giratina V is getting printed. Gudra is getting printed, and Gudra's seeing some play as a Arceus partner in post-rotation in Japan right now. So I'm really excited about these. I'm probably going to hit up my local leagues and see if I can crack a few of these suckers and, you know, maybe get an Iono or a Narzan or something.
Yeah, it's really sick. The Narzan looks sick. The Iono looks sick. I mean, really any of the cards that have silver borders look really good. Any of the yellow bordered cards, they're fine, but yeah, the silver border is where it's at. So, really,
well, it's one thing that's interesting about the silver border is they make the border hollow too, whereas that's the yellow borders they don't. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it looks really, really slick, really clean. I guess there could be a point where you could. I mean, I'm seeing this. This looks like a significant slew of cards here. There's almost feels like there could be a deck that you could make here, of entirely play Pokemon stamped cards.
It's probably like a Lost Zone deck at this point, right?
It's probably a Lost Zone deck, or yeah, probably not Maridon.
Is there a play Comfy? Is there a play Comfy?
It's a good question. You could play, maybe it's a Lost Zone deck without Comfy.
Oh,
yeah, okay. So you just have to swap in four other cards.
You're gonna have Abyss Seeking a little bit.
But yeah, very cool stuff from the Pokemon Company for sure. Always impressed with these prize packs. So let's take a look at the meta for Liverpool. This it was the last most recent regional that we had last week in England, and I felt like there were some really interesting things. About 1,500 players showed up. This is the largest regional in Europe to date, and just shows how not just in the United States the game is growing at a global level. We're seeing like crazy high numbers in Japan. Obviously, we know about the Charlotte regional surpassing 2,000 players just a few weeks ago, and then now the largest tournament in Europe, which is very, very cool to see. Pretty diverse metagame right now. I mean, we've been saying that for a while. This is, feels like a very healthy metagame in the sense that there's a lot of different decks that players can choose and a lot of different decks that players can expect to win with, which is
Yeah.
extremely good. Like, I, in my opinion, like the mark of a solid format is that not only are there a lot of decks, because sometimes I've played in formats where it's like, well, there's a lot of decks, but you know, not many of them could expect to win. But this is a format
Yeah.
really where there's a lot of decks that can expect to win, and you can tailor your deck to beat some of the other decks that you expect to see, which I also think is very healthy. You could take a deck that you just really love, pilot it for a long time, and just, you know, swap in a few cards just depending on what you think the metagame is, and expect to, you know, again, perform better against those decks that you tech against. So really fun format right now, very diverse. And we look at just like the top eight and how many different decks in the top eight, six different decks in the top eight, which is pretty wild to see. And you know, certainly kind of like it's wild to see from maybe like 5 years ago, but at this point in time, like it's kind of becoming the norm. You know, we see sometimes eight different decks, seven different decks. Now here in Liverpool, there were six different ones. Of course, the winning deck, Fabrizio Inga Silva with his Mew EX, the double turbo
Mew
Mew
VMAX.
deck. It's pretty crazy. Oh yeah, Mew VMAX. What did I say? Mew EX? I was thinking about 5 years ago.
There's a Mew EX right now too, but you probably don't want to build a whole deck around it.
Yeah, probably wouldn't be the greatest idea. So Mew VMAX, pretty you know, pretty surprising, I would say, given the amount of dark that there is in the format in the form of Charizard and Roaring Moon. But Riley, I just want to get your initial takes. What either did you see on the stream that surprised you, or what about the final results surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, Mew is a top contender in this metagame. We saw it really show up hard in Charlotte. And I think, or sorry, Portland is when it showed up pretty hard. And then Charlotte, it did all right. And Mew is just, it's one of those decks, right? It could win a tournament. Obviously, Andrew and I thought it was the call in Charlotte, playing it ourselves. And we see Fabrizio kind of running a very similar list to what Ian Robb and Andrew and I have played in the past. I think the main difference is really just cutting, if I'm looking at it right, it's just cutting a Cram for a Lost City, is the only difference there from the Ian Robb list, which is just goes to show kind of the staying power of a traditional double turbo Mew deck. Mew does have some really appealing traits right now. It's very good against Giratina in particular. I think that's the real selling point of Mew, is that Giratina has emerged as perhaps the best deck in the format, and Mew puts a stop to that for sure. And honestly, I think the double turbo Mew into Charizard is pretty acceptable in the grand scheme of things. You're really trying to push for those like judge path turns in the early game. And you are able to deal with one Charizard thanks to a box of disaster, plus two power tablets. So, and you can get creative as well with like psychic leaping and stuff. I think as I played that matchup more as double turbo Mew, I feel more and more comfortable in it. Unless my opponent just like completely pops off and like gets turn two double Charizard, which did happen to me in Charlotte, but shouldn't happen an exceptionally large amount of the time. So yeah, I think Mew is a totally solid deck right now. It has very good routes against a lot of the metagame. And honestly, I think you could justify playing either of the Mew variants. And we could talk more about going forward in the latter half of the cast, but it doesn't surprise me to see Mew winning Liverpool, especially because this is also a European tournament. And Mew just has a hold over Europe that's undeniable at this point, right?
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. Pretty
And I
wild.
don't know why that is, right? Do they just not respect you? Like, do they not, does nobody tech for it?
Well, here's the thing about Fabrizio's run. If you look at the matchup spread, you'll notice that he played and beat every single Roaring Moon deck that he faced, which from my experience is just incredible. Like, that is an incredibly low percentage chance of that happening with the double turbo version of Mew, because in that version there is really no chance for you to set up like a set up some kind of psychic leap play and then only leave two prizers on your field, which might be a way, you know, that's a way that Mew can try to overcome the, you know, just attacking with 2-3 prizers, right, to try to get a little bit more damage on the field and take an extra knockout. So that's really off the table by and large for the double turbo Mew deck. So to lose to double turbo Mew as the Roaring Moon player, you have to do something like really, really difficult, or you have to dead draw, like something has to go wrong, or you have to take a 2-prize knockout. And that can allow them to then either Roxanne or Iona you to a single card or that low hand size. I find it just incredibly difficult to lose to double turbo Mew with Roaring Moon. And I think for Fabrizio, it's just his tournament. He played 4 Roaring Moons and he beat all 4 of them. I don't know how that happens, because again, Roaring Moon should just power up 3 attackers and say, you know, say the attacks twice, right? Either Moltres or Roaring Moon. And you should really never lose that matchup. So for him to beat 4 of them. Now, I know for a fact, Jesse had reached out to some of his later round opponents, and they had mentioned that they had dead drawn against Fabrizio. And so that, you know, okay, that makes sense. Maybe they got stuck with the path, or they just didn't have anything in hand. But to dead draw like 4 games in a row, I mean, it's just, again, the
chance of that happening. Mew is like putting you in situations where you're way more likely to dead draw than, you know, because they're judging you.
Sure. Yeah. But it seemed like from what they had stated to, at least when Jesse had reached out, it was like they just had brick hands to begin with. But yeah. You're right. You know, Judge is kind of the great equalizer from the time that it's been released. So it can really swing those otherwise terrible matchups. You know, we think of Charizard as being a pretty bad matchup just in a vacuum for Mew. But then you factor in Judge and how poorly Charizard can draw off that. And all of a sudden they can steal wins out of nowhere.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, just something worth injecting in there. And, you know, just taking a look at Consta in 10th place with, I believe, Fusion Mew. He actually didn't play any Roaring Moons. And I think that's one of the things about having a wide metagame as well, is you just don't know for sure. You could easily just not hit a deck top 5.
And it's interesting because that's kind of what I tell the players that I coach, is like, take your deck and then just make it as streamlined as possible towards one goal, because the metagame is so wide right now that if you try to account for every single matchup, you're going to end up with a deck that's really diluted and right. has a hard time pulling off what it wants to do. But I do think that the Fusion Strike version, you know, and not to get this too like Roaring Moon pilled, but I have played a lot of that deck recently. But the Fusion Strike version does have a pretty solid Roaring Moon matchup, because
yeah,
you can
totally
augment
does.
That prize trade with the Meloetta, of course. So just wanted to put that there.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Some other things that I think were interesting. I thought Niklas's like turbo-ish Snorlax deck was really interesting. It played 4 Pokestops and 4 Cross Seavers. So you can quickly kind of plow through the deck and get to your endgame loop. You also played 3 Pokemon Catchers. So you just have additional Gust. You have the Cross Seavers. So if you happen to mill your supporters, you can grab them really quickly with your Cross Seaver or your Rotom or something. And you're just getting to that endgame like way, way more rapidly between your Rotom draw and your Pokestop mill. So it was really interesting. I don't know if it's necessarily better, because I haven't tried it myself, but it was crazy kind of watching him on stream, and just he's plowing through so much of his deck every turn without having to play a draw supporter, and it was Really awesome just watching him get to those, like catchers, for example, and stick things before you even like have to play an Erika's or before you're playing a boss, like just sticking things in that very first or second turn without even really trying, you
Yeah.
know, and that's sick.
Yep. 100%.
So I think there's something there. And, you know, we're continuing to see Snorlax show up at these tournaments. Snorlax is a legitimate player. I actually think it's one of the decks with one of the best matchup spreads right now. Like, Giratina is very winnable, to be honest. And I think people kind of overstate how bad the matchup is.
I don't know about that, right? Like you're seeing the
I
matchup
mean,
played on
they lose
stream a
to
lot and
Tinas more than they win. But at the same time, you know, you look at like Cal Connors' run, for example, and what was it?
Portland
Was it Portland? Was it Portland?
or
It probably
Charlotte?
was. And he like beat multiple Tinas along the way there. So it's not like it's not completely untenable that like should repel you from playing the deck, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And you know, in the same spirit, like you can go without playing very many Tinas in a tournament, totally reasonably. Like, and I just want to continue to emphasize that, like, just having a streamlined strategy that works really well, which Snorlax does against a vast majority of the metagame, is super viable, you know? And
Yeah,
I
totally.
think the only deck that you can reasonably expect to guarantee to see at any tournament is Charizard. And even then, Brent Tonneson doesn't look like he played a single Charizard, you know? Like, it just happens.
It does just happen. It does just it's wild, and this is something that you learn after just having a lot of experience with the game. Like after my decade plus of playing in tournaments, you just realize that a lot of the metagame, like it's going to be so spread out. The things that you don't want to see, you may see multiple of. The things that you really want to see, you might not see a single one of. It's just funny how these tournaments work, and ultimately, it's just kind of a round by round, round by round situation, and you know, frankly, the advice that I give is don't overtech because
Yeah,
you really are
absolutely.
not guaranteed to see those matchups. So, yeah, Charizard, you bring up three in the top 16. So, still another high performing deck. I do feel like Charizard is, of all the decks that are in the meta, even maybe more so than Giratina, is just the most consistent presence.
Yeah.
It's very simple to pilot for the most part, and we're seeing a wide variety of players pick up the deck and play it to high finishes. It just always seems to be in that conversation for a win, whether it's just being in top eight or actually winning the tournament or making it to the finals. It just always seems to be in that conversation. So there's a lot of decks that kind of ebb and flow between whether or not they have a chance to win. But Charizard just feels like that deck that is more metagame defining, is always, you know, in the mix towards the end of the game, and is, you know, kind of a really exciting play to think about for Knoxville, at least for me and our group.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I think when we look back on this format and are kind of reflecting on it in hindsight, Charizard is going to be the deck, in my opinion, that defined this format. And there are lots of other good decks. There are lots of other viable decks, many of which will have won tournaments all said and done. But this is Charizard's like playground, really, and the format is warped around that entirely.
Pretty crazy to think about. Not a ton of Guardi up near the top. We had a couple in top 16, but not really in contention for that win. Where do you feel like Guardi is right now in the meta?
I think Guardi's kind of in the same place as always. Gardevoir is actually can go toe to toe pretty well with Charizard, which is one of the selling points of Guardi. It does tend to lose the matchup if it falls behind, which Gardevoir can stumble. You know, it's definitely possible for Gardevoir to stumble games. And if that happens and Charizard gets like the turn two rare candy, they can really take advantage of you. But I would say in general, like Gardevoir has a decent Charizard matchup. So to me, that's kind of the big selling point. Gardevoir also is pretty okay into Mew, in my opinion, because you're really able to really reach for those big knockouts. And Mew can obviously play around it with stuff like the box, but you know, you're just a vacuum away from having a horrible time.
Yes, very
So,
true.
you know, Gardevoir, I think there's some selling points of Gardevoir for sure. I think Gardevoir's falling points continue to be that it's a really hard deck to navigate effectively in a best of three setting. So only the players who are most experienced with Gardevoir are really realistically going to be getting value out of that tournament play. So that's one component of it. And I think the other component is its matchups aren't so like mind-blowingly good either that, you know, it's going to naturally just rise to the top. You know, you're seeing the players who are doing well with Gardevoir are people who have been playing it for a long time, are really experienced with it, and know the matchups in and out, and are playing it like completely optimized both with the clock and with the gameplay. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Tord was one of the two top 16, right, with Gardevoir, right. And Tord right. is like the Gardevoir guy. So,
yep.
You know, I don't know if I could recommend Gardevoir to like the layman as a player. I think you need to have that backbone to make it effective. Whereas you could pick up a double Turbo Mew or you could pick up a Charizard and probably do reasonably well, you know, with not necessarily the same level of experience.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Another really interesting development we saw in the win and in round on stream, it was probably their worst matchup, Roaring Moon, but we saw Liam Burden with their Arceus Rayquaza VMAX deck. I was looking at this, and the list, like, nothing about this list screams that the deck has an advantage anywhere.
Into anything?
You know, and that's like a very, you know, low-level take on it, and that's like kind of an initial, you know, when I first looked at the list, I'm like, what does this beat? Like, where is the strategy here? But a couple of those in top 32, really, really fascinating. I mean, I think you look at Arceus V-Star as having, you know, some really solid matchups just in general. But I'm not really digging the VMAX. I think the Rayquaza is kind of funky.
The Rayquaza is sick, man.
Well, yeah, it's sick for sure. Like, it's
first
a cool
off,
card.
Azure Pulse for knockout. Or Azure Pulse to draw three and then Max Burst for knockout. You're mad.
Yeah, right. That's true.
If your opponent ever does that to you,
I swear to goodness, if I get Max Bursted at Knoxville for game, and they do like 400 damage for game just for fun, I'm gonna flip the table.
But yeah, I totally agree with you in the whole, like, when I think Jesse was the one who like actually shared the list in our Discord, and when I looked at it, I'm like, what
That's
is
a
it?
Lie.
You know, like, what's going on here? What's the MO? I think what's going on is that Arceus is just kind of a generally good card, and Rayquaza can take knockouts. You know,
and Rayquaza exists.
Because it could take a knockout or something,
yeah.
You know? And
yeah, because I mean, I just think of Arceus's viability in this format, because I do think it's a viable deck, right? It's been throughout its history, had its ebbs and flows, but I think even now it's a solid card, and it will always be a solid card. But I think of Arceus's main partner as Path of the Peak. You are naturally just a slower deck. You're not taking those big one shots. I guess in this version you are with the Rayquaza, but even so, you need to get an Arceus attack off to reasonably power up a Rayquaza. So you're still, you know, on that three turns of waiting there. But I just think of the natural partner for Arceus as a Path. And so to see this list and okay, get beyond the Rayquaza, get beyond the Radiant Heatran. There's four Magma Basin in the deck. Like, what? What? I don't quite understand that synergy there with the Arceus, because I do think you want to like slow your opponent down. You're trying to build up these stage ones with a ton of energy in play. You want to try to maybe disrupt the opponent, but that's clearly not the strategy that some of these players opted for.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I can see the process here, right? Arceus is like generally kind of tough to knock out. It's just a solid card. It's consistent. And you can throw the energy onto these Rayquazas, and the Rayquazas are, especially the VMAX, kind of a safe place where the energy can just live. It's pretty unlikely for most decks to boss KO a Rayquaza VMAX. My problem is mostly just like, Rayquaza just doesn't do like enough for the right amounts of energy. I guess is my problem. So you're really looking to kind of Rayquaza, well, at the very end of a game versus Charizard, I guess. But Charizard's going to be taking knockouts on you like relatively fast.
Yep.
I don't really fully get it, but I mean, it's sick. Like, Armor is just sick for sure.
Yeah, I mean, congrats, right?
Rayquaza's sick. So, like, I'm into that. The synergy between Rayquaza VMAX and VEX is kind of sick. Like, there's lots of sick stuff in here for sure.
Yeah,
Lots of really
absolutely.
cool maneuvers. You get two different
Absolutely.
Charka decks, which is awesome.
Man, very, very, very cool. Yeah, I mean, the Charcadet art, I think, is fantastic on the Obsidian Flames Charcadet. I just love that kind
I
of
think both of them are
pastel-y
pretty cool, to
look.
be honest, but
Yeah,
I do
the
like
other,
this new
this,
Flames one more.
the Paldean Fates is a little too busy for me, but the Obsidian Flames, now that is chef's kiss.
I like the really like thick bold lines on the Obsidian Flames one.
I got a thick bold line right here for you, buddy.
Okay. Well.
Any other kind of final thoughts on Liverpool before we head into Knoxville predictions?
No, I think that about covers it. Sablezard making another showing. Don't sleep on Sablezard.
I know. That kind of feels like the deck we should have just been jamming. I hate the Lost Zone decks right now, but
That's fine.
I could see bending to a Lost Box Charizard, but I digress. It's time now to thank our presenting sponsor of the cast, Manscaped. Manscaped has some of the best products for men's grooming that you can find anywhere on planet Earth, perhaps even anywhere in the galaxy, the universe, et cetera, et cetera. They have
The
fantastic
multiverse,
products.
maybe.
The multi many people are saying this, or at least we are saying this. They have some fantastic products that I use practically every day. Riley, why don't you give the listeners some of your favorites?
Absolutely. I mean, those of us here at Tag Team are huge fans of the entire Manscaped lineup. And, over the course of these regionals, I've had some of you even come up and say how much you've enjoyed your Manscaped products. I'm a huge fan of the Beard Hedger and the Boxers. And I really do love the Lawnmower. The 5.0 just recently came out. And if you're looking for a down there grooming product, the Lawnmower really does come in clutch. It's waterproof as well, so you can just take it into the shower, for example, which is really awesome. The ceramic blade, I've never gotten a nick using the Lawnmower. JW, I don't know if you can attest differently. Can't make any
Claims
legally
for what
binding
that means for you.
guarantees.
Yeah,
You can't
but
make any legally binding guarantees, but I've never gotten a nick. And when you're working in a zone like that, that's really important to me.
I definitely value that. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, their products are just really excellent. And even if you want like deodorant or shampoo and conditioner, body wash, you got them all lined up for you. So if any of this sounds really interesting, guess what? You can head over to manscaped.com. Use code tag team at checkout. You'll not only get 20% off, but you also get free shipping, which is a great deal. Valentine's Day also coming up, so if you're looking for a gift for someone that you care about, this is the perfect candidate for something like that.
Yeah, so head on over to manscaped.com, use code tag team 20% off plus free shipping. That's tag team at checkout, 20% off plus free shipping. Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. So looking forward, let's take the next part of the cast and just talk about kind of group thought, where we're heading into Knoxville. We covered some of the big decks, and I just want the listeners to kind of get candid with me, I guess. I mean, I know you're not going, Riley, but with kind of where the group is with our testing and what we're liking at this point. So there's maybe three decks on the table. I know Andrew's very against playing Charizard, but that to me and that to Jesse, like again, we were talking about it earlier in the cast, seems like a deck that is just always, no matter the landscape, always in contention for a win. And then we have been considering Mew. I mean, it just won. We were frankly kind of hoping that Mew wouldn't show up again in Liverpool, and then winning the tournament, it obviously is going to have a little bit more of a target on its back. Maybe more players will tech in a Drapion or a Spiritomb or something like that, make it a little bit more difficult. And then the final deck Excuse me, getting a little bit of gas. But the final deck that we're considering is Roaring Moon.
Yeah.
I should not be a surprise to many of you, but Roaring Moon, I do feel like, has that consistency that we really liked about Maraidon, and being able to just kind of run over opponents and play more games of Pokemon than our opponents. You think about, you know, Charizard and Gardy as those setup decks, just having those hands where, okay, you see the opening hand, you draw your first card, and then you just scoop it up almost immediately because you can't actually get into the game, and your opponent just runs right over you. So with a deck like Roaring Moon, you just have big dudes. They're swinging pretty early, if not on turn one, and you can put a lot of pressure on opponents. So I think that's something that we certainly valued with the Maraidon deck, and translates at least that aspect to Roaring Moon in this current format.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really valid top three, and we had talked a little bit before the cast about how you kind of landed there as well. I think for me personally, if Knoxville was on the table for me, I would really strongly consider Charizard. I kind of regretted not slamming Charizard in Portland. It just is such a reliable, safe strategy, and we've personally talked before about how there is like room for outmaneuvering and outplaying in the mirror, for example, which is something I would value with a deck like Charizard, given how popular it is in the field. And I think I would feel remiss for ending this format without going a run with Charizard. You know, I think it's so good. It's so reliable. When I think of decks that could win a tournament, I would never, ever write Charizard off in this format, where you totally like could look at a top eight and be like, this deck can't win. The only way you could say that about Charizard is like if it's full of Snorlax matchups or something, which fair, I guess, if that happens. You know, I think the only matchups Charizard is like really truly uncomfortable against are Snorlax and like Rapid Strike, but Rapid Strike has fallen off because of the rise of Mew and Roaring Moon.
Yes.
You know, which has positioned Charizard even more favorably.
Right.
So, I don't know. I personally would want to swing Charizard if I was going to Knoxville, with maybe Mew as a second place, because I just think it's that deck.
Mm-hmm. And that's another one where it's like, you know, kind of want to give that one more run. We have a whole nother, 11 months to rock Charizard.
True.
We don't got that much time to rock Mew.
That's true. Yeah, and that was kind of the logic between playing Mew at Charlotte. Honestly, it was not only that we thought Mew was a really good position, but it was the end of Mew's lifespan, basically, which is kind of fun in its own way. I guess if you're looking at Mew, are you more seriously considering like a Path Judge version or a Meloetta, at least a Sparkle version?
Yeah, it's really tough because I do feel like Moon was, I think, a 9% meta share, and I only see that going up, maybe not significantly, but it does feel like, you know, it certainly will continue to be one of those top five decks, if not a top three deck, somewhere in that 10 to 12% range is what I'd predict for the deck. So just a slight uptick from what we saw at Liverpool, and that deck has really just been gaining steam. So with that in mind, again, considering how difficult it is to win that matchup in particular, and it being maybe 10 to 12% of the field, it might cause me to give more credence to a deck like, you know, Fusion Strike Mew, or something like, you know, again, that 10th place list in Liverpool that had a very kind of like as thin of a Fusion Strike emphasis as possible. Maybe there's some way to kind of split the difference between the double turbo and the fusion. You know, you play maybe a couple of Path of the Peak, right? And then do something like that. So that's an option on the table for us. It's like try to only have as much fusion as you need to maybe pull off a Meloetta play or an Ice Cube play. And then everything else is kind of geared toward the path and trying to stick a path. So that's something we've considered, you know, kind of as well, is trying to split that difference. Makes it really hard because you do have to devote a lot of space to the at least Sparkle and the Fusion Strike energy and things like that. But something that we have sleeved up right now. Something that we're trying.
And would you ever consider like a Blocklax? I think Blocklax is so good.
I think Blocklax is kind of insane. So would I ever consider Blocklax? No, I won't be. Yeah, frankly, at this point, I don't think I could pilot it the way it deserves to be piloted for Knoxville. So,
and I guess that's fair if that's your answer, but yeah. You got to ask the question, right?
I know. It is good. It's just the thing about playing those counter decks, those stall decks, is you have to know every matchup. So that again, like, really favors players that have put a lot of time into it. And I've put enough time into it, right? Do I feel comfortable, you know, discussing the deck, you know, talking with people about the deck? Sure. But do I feel comfortable in game being able to make the correct decisions over and
over?
Do
you feel comfortable putting your $10,000 tournament on the line?
Exactly. Right. And you know, frankly, there are those micro decisions that I just don't feel comfortable making in the moment with the level of, you know, play that I've given the deck. That's not to say, I mean, you know, Blocklax would be something that, you know, if we were seriously looking at it at a future tournament, like, I would put hundreds of games into it, right? And I'd learn everything inside and out, and I'd figure it out, and we'd play it, and that'd be great. But at this point, for Knoxville, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. I think you're slightly overestimating, like, how much in-game experience you need, you know. Also, I doubt you'd put hundreds of games.
Like, me? You'd put sure dozens. I would.
You'd put dozens.
I've played hundreds of games with decks in this format.
Of a block lex, though? Because your opponents are all just sitting there, like, passing turn on TCG Live, like, hoping that you quit.
Okay, well, no. I mean, if we were testing, like, a stall deck for Worlds, right? Then, and we were playing against not on the ladder, like, playing against each other, yeah, I'd probably put in. Yeah, certainly as many games.
Hundreds is still a lot. Hundreds.
Yeah, multiple hundreds, 200. Yeah, maybe not 200. Maybe like
100.
Yeah.
Yeah. But more so, the point I'm making is, like, it's not impossible to kind of, like, intuit, like, what you need to be doing. I think some of those very micro decisions can be tough. But, you know, if you're, like, looking at kind of the more macro and, frankly, more relevant decisions of, like, do I Miss Fortune Sisters this turn or Erica's, like, I think you can kind of intuit that out.
Probably figure that out, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, discern that for sure. At least I hope
that's,
I will be able to.
That's not to say that practice isn't valuable in that deck, because it totally is. But I think, like, a player of your level could probably navigate their way through it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So...
And you, not to mention, you got, like, so many, like, free wins, so to speak, just by, like, hitting that one Erica's.
Yes, that is definitely true, right? There is an element to that. There's also the element of player fatigue, right? Like, you're going to potentially be playing this deck for, you know, a full 9 rounds, assuming you don't drop, and then you're day 2, assuming that you make it there. And so, you know, for somebody like me with my tiny little brain, having to go 2 time for every match.
Well, I also would kind of counter that as well, because I think some people are just gonna, like, scoop to you, you know, like, you pull their Radiant Greninja and they're like, all right, that's it, and you do that in game two, you're like 15 minutes into the set and they're like, whatever, and then they just leave. You know, like, that,
yeah,
totally,
that's
happens.
Gotta be right.
That,
yeah,
happens a lot, and, like, and, you know, your games against Giratina are gonna go, like, to time or whatever, and your games against Mew are maybe gonna go to time, but, like, you're gonna hit, like, Guardies and Charizards, they're gonna scoop to you, like, 15 minutes into the set. And you can go get lunch or whatever.
Yeah, right. That's true. That's pretty
so funny. Yeah, like, you're gonna go to time maybe more than average because of just the nature of the deck, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of where our head's at. I mean, Riley, do you suggest anything else? I mean, I know you're kind of saying, like, well, stall might be good. I agree. It probably has really, you know, good matchups in the field right now. But
I think Charizard and stall are like what I would, like, be prevailing, considering if stall is just off the table, whatever. Charizard would be my personal recommendation. You know, I could endorse either of those other two decks that you've listed, but I think there's just something to be said for how monstrous Charizard is. I guess within those couple of decks, do you have any strong leanings? You know, you mentioned Mew prior to seeing the results of Liverpool, but does that maintain kind of as your looking ahead to a few days
Well,
from now?
yeah, I mean it's tough because I do really like I really like Moon. I think it's a very, very strong pick. And I think with a you know, if the tournament was tonight, then I would select that deck just based off comfortability. Now there's a lot that can happen. I'm actually getting in to Knoxville on Friday morning, potentially, like however soon we can get there. I'm leaving
That's
in the morning
nice.
And might get there around, you know, that lunchtime hour, potentially around noon, again depending on how crazy the person driving the car is with when they want to wake up. But I'm gonna get there, you know, one of the benefits of being unemployed is that I can leave for tournaments early. So
that's so true, actually.
Literally, I because I always just get there, you know, I'll leave after work and I get there at 11 and then I figure out my deck and then I
it's
know,
actually
don't get
so
any
nice
time
to get there
it.
Earlier. I realized
yeah,
after doing that in like Portland, so much nicer.
I know. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. So I, you know, there's a lot that can change, right? Between, especially having a full day with the boys where we're just, that's all we're going to talk for hours on end is like this matchup, mm-hmm. this matchup, playing a few games, you know, really going back and forth with lists and trying to come to a solution. That's, you know, that's what we've already started to do, obviously, in the Discord, but then just being there, anything could happen, right? I could pivot completely to play something like Max Caliber. You know, I want to leave every option. I want to leave every option on the table. But
I feel like that option
point...
should be closed. But like the rest of them, maybe.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. Thanks for the words of advice there. But as of this point, the deck that I would feel the most comfortable playing is Roaring Moon. I do feel like I know those matchups inside and out. I feel like the deck is strong enough to win, even though it hasn't. And I just like it into the general meta. Like we see a Mew deck win. Great. Especially a double turbo Mew deck. Great. We see Giratina consistently doing well. I think it will consistently do well at Knoxville. Charizard.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people give that matchup edge to Charizard. I would say it's slightly favored for Roaring Moon. So like that's not a matchup I'm worried about. And I don't think a lot of players, you know, are going to be bringing Guardian to this tournament. So I think just generally speaking, the meta is in a really prime position for Roaring Moon to do well. The problem with that is you are going to have to navigate mirrors, which I feel pretty confident in doing. You know, that was always something we worried about with the Maraidon deck. But Maraidon, when we were playing it in the early season, never really approached the usage numbers of what we're seeing with Roaring Moon. So, you know,
That's not true. Maraidon was like the third most popular deck in Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh it was?
Yeah, I think so.
It wasn't? Okay, maybe I'm talking out. Because I didn't face a ton of Maraidon. It was like a couple every tournament.
Yeah.
You know, so in any case, I am worried a little bit about the mirror.
Yeah, for sure. Like the point you're actually making.
Yeah, the point I'm actually making is just being worried about the mirror and like how, you know, it could just is volatile, right? Whoever goes has a significant advantage. So you're just putting it all on the coin flip as opposed to how you can outmaneuver your opponent.
Now, here's a question for you. If you don't play Roaring Moon, does that make you a charlatan?
For hosting a class and then not playing it?
Not necessarily just for hosting a class, but for being like the preacher of the Roaring Moon,
like the content creator that has pushed Roaring Moon.
Yeah,
the genius, the second genius behind Roaring Moon hype, the first genius being of course Ross Coffin. I mean,
like,
I don't think so.
Not make you a charlatan? A snake oil salesman?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's a good deck. Like, it's consistently done well since Portland. It's done very, very well. And you just look at the usages and final standings, and like, it is just a good deck by the numbers, right? Like, it deserves.
Right.
It's like how I felt Maraidon should have always been that deck. Like, it feels the same. Like, no one really gave it a lot of credence, and then now we started playing it, and lists have been really refined. Where it was just this discarded deck, now it's starting to see some favor. So I think it always should have been somewhere in the mix, but it just happened because we finally figured out lists later on in the format. So
yeah,
I don't know. Am I a charlatan? Perhaps. You know, if I end up playing something that's not Roaring Moon, you can give me a lot of crap for it. But
yeah, I mean,
again,
that's kind of where I was going next. Like, will Andrew and I call you a charlatan next week if you don't? Almost guaranteed. Yeah.
As long as you just call me 3-time regional champ, then. I don't care what other monikers come with it.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, you can always whip that out if you need to bail.
I need the
If you
the
ever need to
eject
bail out of
button.
a tough conversation, you always got that. That's so true. Fair
So,
enough.
yeah,
Well, yeah,
pretty funny.
I'm excited for you all. Like, I think this is gonna be another sick tournament in the lineup this year. The season's been really intense in a good way this year. So, and I'll be waiting by my cell phone for when the call inevitably comes.
Hey man, what do we play tonight? You know,
We've been
what do we play
testing for
tomorrow?
hours and we're completely lost.
And we're thinking about Arceus Superior, you know?
When that call comes, I'll pick up the phone and I'll be there for you.
You also play Charizard, and then everyone will go crazy, and Ange will be like, "No, I'm not playing Rare Candy in my deck. Absolutely not."
That your impression? You did
Yeah,
not
that.
nail the inflection, but that's okay. I can tell you're trying your best.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Yeah. Well, it's been a while since we've seen each other, so maybe I'll get the
Me when I
impression
don't talk
back.
to someone after 1 week.
Right, exactly. So yeah, it should be really fun. Obviously Knoxville going to be one of the smaller tournaments in the season, just because we capped it. I think it was like 1200 or 1300 players in the Masters division.
Little
So
baby tournament, yeah.
yeah, a little teeny little, you know, the winner of this one is going to be like, you know,
Embarrassed,
it's going to have a little
probably.
asterisk, right? No, I'm just
Definitely
totally kidding.
asterisk level tournament for sure.
Totally kidding, totally kidding. But is kind of crazy how much the game has exploded. Now that we say 1300 is a small tournament, it's pretty crazy. So yeah, just being as transparent as possible. Those are kind of the three decks for me that I feel very comfortable with. I ultimately don't think we'll go with Charizard, just again given Andrew's proclivity against the deck. But Mew is not off the table. Something, you know, Roaring Moon, I really like. If it tests really well the night before, as it has been all this week, that'll be a play. You never can say no to Maridon. And then, you know, maybe there's an Arceus deck that we figure out, like, has, you know, we haven't put a ton of Arceus testing in at this point, but, you know, again, I don't want to rule anything out. I want to try to be as transparent as possible for the people back at home.
Yeah.
But again, right now, what I'd be leaning towards is Moon, and that's what I'm trying to get players to play, and that's what I'm trying to get our group on.
I mean, it would be exciting, to see the preacher practicing the word.
I know, and I have nothing to lose. That's the like really beautiful thing about it, is there's nothing on the line for me. For Andrew, he might be sweating a little bit. He might see Roaring Moon and just like, you know, guys, I legally can't play this
Legally.
for my blood pressure. But you know, for me, I'm down to flip some catchers. I'm down to play some trekking shoes, do what I gotta do, just go super ham, super turbo. That sounds kind of fun.
Heck yeah, man. Love
So
that.
yeah. So you'll get all the updates next week on the Tag Team Podcast. We can't wait to bring it to you again next week. Andrew will be back. Riley, I think you're going to be gone, but
Yeah,
that'll be fine
I'll
because
be
we'll
in a work
have.
trip next week.
Yeah. Where are you going this time?
San Diego.
Again. Okay. Well,
Yeah.
let me know how it is. Although I will say
It'll be
in
rainy. It'll
Columbus,
be rainy next week.
yeah, in Columbus, it's been like 50.
Oh,
40s,
that's
50s.
nice.
So
Yeah.
it's been, you know, you can wear a sweater, but you don't have to wear a sweater, which is great.
What
So
do you,
anyway.
I mean, you never have to wear a sweater. Like, there's no law saying you have to wear a sweater. You could just not wear one if you don't want
Yeah, you
to.
could. Okay, good point, good point. Touche, touche. But you'll have all of the juicy details from our runs in Knoxville on next week's podcast. We thank you guys all so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Peace.
See ya.